Good morning. You're listening to Short Stories with Mrs. Sam, brought to you by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. Tune in every week on Sunday at 8:30 a.m. to WHDD 91.9 FM to catch our show. My name is Mrs. Sam. I'm the children's librarian at Hotchkiss Library of Sharon. We have all sorts of wonderful books there for children of all ages, and lovely crafting and story times besides. The weather is warm enough for us to have outside library programs. You can find information on all the events we hold for children and adults alike on our website, HotchkissLibraryofSharon.org, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/HotchkissLibrary. We are open by appointment for browsing and borrowing and computer use every day of the week. This week, in celebration of Children's Book Week, which is May 3rd to 9th, the library has fun take-and-make bags full of everything you need to write your own picture book. Call us to schedule a time to pick one up. Included is a coloring book about drawing characters from famous illustrators, a blank book template, and tips on how to shape a story from local author Caroline Nastro. Today, we are reading short stories provided by special permission from Penguin Random House from their collection, Been There, Done That. This collection is all about how people come up with stories. First, I will read you the real-life account of what actually happened, followed by the short story the author wrote about it, called Falls by Gary D. Schmidt. Falls by Gary D. Schmidt. All right. So first, this is his real-life account. What really happened? Love like leeches. Probably the best job I ever had, the best job I ever will have, was a job at a summer camp on the maintenance crew. I had to deal with plugged-up toilets and corn dogs and kids who threw up, mostly because of corn dogs. But I also built a new cabin and messed around in boats that needed repair and put in docks and planted gardens and built rock walls and assembled bonfires and did a whole lot of things I could never do in the suburbs of New York City. And when I wasn't doing any of those things, I'd play baseball near high pines and swim in clear pools that emptied out in small waterfalls and lay down in the middle of a field to watch hawks circle on the thermals above. I lived for those summers in the Catskill Mountains. When high school was what high school often is, filled with jerks and would-be jerks and locker rooms and meaningless homework and drama about not very much and social status crap, I thought of that camp. Those mountains, and the friends I had up there who loved what I loved and still love, high grass and hawks on thermals and mountain pools and pines. The camp had one other thing, the most important thing, the really, really most important thing, Mindy White. Mindy White had long dark hair. She had green eyes. When she laughed, her voice was like poetry. When she smiled, her smile was like beauty. When she looked at me, I wished more than anything that she loved me like I loved her. But she didn't, because Mindy White was actually in love with another guy at the camp, a little older than me, who was an idiot. I tried telling Mindy White that Lee was an idiot, but she was too much in love. She talked about Lee while I did the dishes. She talked about Lee while I helped her peel carrots. She talked about Lee while I fetched cabbages from the basement below the kitchen, or the lemon pies from the freezer, or the canned ravioli from the pantry. She talked about Lee while I scraped the burnt oil and lard from the grill in the kitchen, the hottest and most awful job at the camp, but one I took my time on, because she worked beside me. I scraped the grill of my shirt off. It was that hot, and I thought that might do something. But it didn't. She loved Lee. For 2 years, I listened to Mindy White talk about Lee, until I heard one day over the winter that Lee had broken things off. I told you he was an idiot. I was overjoyed. I was thrilled. I was filled with fathomless hope. I went to the weight machine and began a program of lifting. The next summer, Mindy White came to camp. Lee, too. And you know what? She still loved him. Really, she still loved the idiot. Even when he started going with someone else at camp. Even when I stood over the grill, shirtless and buff and everything, she still loved the idiot. She read me stories she had written, and in every story, the hero's name was... Well, do I even have to say it? There was a set of falls near the camp. It was filled with black and leachy water. We swam there anyway, mostly because of the jumps, even though you had to puck the leeches off your skin every time you came out of the water. You could jump into the big pool at the bottom from a rock about 12 feet up. Then you could climb to the top of the falls and jump into the small pool that gathered there from 40 feet up. And that pool really was no bigger than your outstretched arms. No kidding. One day I went there with two of the counselors, and Lee, who didn't know that I hated him. The whole way there, Lee told us how he was going to jump in first, how he wasn't afraid of any heights, how he figured he was going to dive in head first, how he'd done stuff like this plenty of times. When we finally stood on the ledge in brutal sunlight, the two counselors jumped, then I jumped, and then Lee stood alone and looked down, and looked down, and looked down. I have to say, I felt sorry for him. I could see he was about to wet his pants. But he looked down, and he looked down, and he looked down, and finally I called up and told him to climb back. He didn't need to jump. It was fine. We'd come and do it another day. It was really fine. He climbed down. The whole way home, he explained why he hadn't jumped. The water was filled with leeches, he said. He was allergic to leeches, he said. He could die from leeches, he said. I wanted to tell Mindy White he'd chickened out. I really wanted to tell Mindy White he'd chickened out. But I never did. The next day in the kitchen, she read another one of her stories about wonderful, marvelous, amazing Lee, and how he saved the day, and how he was loving and kind and true and blue. I kept my shirt on and scraped the lard from the grill. So, that was the author telling us a little bit about what really happened, and here is the story he wrote that was inspired by what really happened. Falls, by Gary D. Schmidt. The best job, I mean, the best job at any summer camps... the best job at any summer camp is maintenance, because after you've finished scraping corn dogs and baked beans off 200 plates, and after you've wiped corn dogs and baked beans off 20 tables, and after you've swept corn dogs and baked beans off the floors beneath the 20 tables, which isn't easy, you're free until supper time, when you have to set 200 plates on the 20 tables again. So you can hike to the falls below Napoc Road, which I had never seen, but were supposed to be 70 feet high, and where once two kids got caught in the undercurrent beneath the falls and didn't show up again until next spring. I could hardly wait to see them. The falls, I mean. And it's where I was heading right now, along with Mark Mann and two other guys who I didn't really know from the farms down the road. But not with Mindy White, who I really wanted to swim at the falls with. She wasn't coming. Did I say that I really wanted to swim at the falls with Mindy White? Did I say that I had been in love with Mindy White since camp orientation? She waved as the four of us left. I waved back, even though I was pretty sure she didn't know my name. She had green eyes and long black hair. How could I not have waved back? But she wasn't coming with us. And instead, I was walking to the falls with Mark and these other two guys, who had the arms and chests that throwing cows and hay bales will give you, I guess. The sun was brutal, and we took off our shirts and draped them over our backs, and our sneakers sank into the asphalt of Napoc Road, and Mark said he could hardly wait to get under the water, and I said I could hardly wait either. So we climbed over the guardrail and down the bank into the cool of the hemlocks. I was ready to dive beneath the falls. Who cared about undercurrents? I was really ready. And I could hear them, hidden as they were behind the trees, pouring gorgeous white water over the high rocks, cascading into a crystal pool speckled with sunlight, the cool mists coating the green and mossy shores, the pine boughs, the rocks, and soon me. Pine needles were slick, and came to the white sunlight below the falls. I looked up at 7 stories of water gushing down, at 7 stories of dirty dark yellow water gushing down. Dirty dark yellow water gushing down into a black and eerily still pool. No cool mists coating anything, nothing green and mossy, just stony shores crusted with something. Did I say the water was black? It really was. I shoved a pine branch beneath its surface. It disappeared. We're not going to swim in this, I said. Mark looked at me like I was crazy. Of course not, he pointed up the falls. We have to climb to the top. I looked at him like he was crazy. 70 feet high, the water sprang over the rocks, which looked pretty slimy. Gray plant stuff on most of them, and it looked pretty slimy, too. And did I say 70 feet? To the top? I asked. He nodded, and together with the other two guys, we skirted the black pool, leaning against the rock walls so we didn't touch the water, and reached the bottom of the falls. Just for the record, the rocks were pretty slimy. They even smelled slimy. And they were sharp. Mark left his shirt on a rock. We did, too, and he began to climb beside the cascading yellow water. We did, too. Don't look down, he said, and laughed like it was so funny. I guess the other two guys thought it was so funny, too, because they laughed just like Mark did. I didn't laugh. Everyone always says, don't look down, but of course you look down. Of course you do. You want to see the sharp rocks you're going to hit after you slipped off that first hold. So I looked down as I heaved myself up, one ledge after another, leaving the sharp rocks farther and farther beneath me, so that the impact when I hit them would be greater and greater and greater. You all right? Hollered one of the guys beneath me. He probably figured I was going to take both of them with me when I slipped. Never better, I hollered back. Translation, this is how people die. But since I'm telling you this, you know that I didn't, and that I clambered up behind Mark when we reached the top, and that I looked down again at the whole slimy 70 feet and tried not to upchuck. While the other two guys clambered up, Mark showed me another pool, closed off by a shadowed cliff. This pool was tiny. If you were floating in it right now, you could stretch out your hands and touch both sides easy, but you wouldn't want to float in it because the water was black there too. That? I asked Mark. We're going to swim in that? He said something, but the sounds of the waterfall bounced off the slimy rocks and filled the air, and I couldn't hear him at all. He pointed up, and I looked. There's a ledge above us, he screamed. So? He moved his hands up and down as if he were pulling himself up. I got it. More climbing. And the rocks were slimy and sharp again. Of course. We climbed, Mark, then the two guys, then me. 40 more feet. The thunder of the waterfall in our ears, me looking down the whole time. I didn't fall. I didn't upchuck. I didn't wet my shorts, which is why the two guys went ahead of me, because they thought I might. We climbed and climbed, and finally clambered up to a ledge, where nothing was slimy, because we were so far above the water, but where we still had to be careful, because the ledge was pretty thin, and the four of us were standing on it. I looked down. The dark pool was the size of a quarter. "What are we doing up here?" I asked. "We're going to jump," Mark said. I looked over the ledge again. "What?" I asked. "We're going to jump." "Where?" "Into the pool," he said. I pointed down. "That pool?" "Do you see any other?" He kicked his shoes off. So did the other two guys. Right then, I think I hated them all. "That pool is tiny," I said. "Yeah, so be careful you don't miss." "You going to wet your shorts?" said one of the other guys, which was good timing, because, in fact, I thought I might this time. And then I got it. I finally got it. No human being would jump into a tiny pool from 40 feet up, especially a tiny pool with black water. No one would be that stupid. This was a test. This was three guys from farms testing me, the city kid from New York, who lived where no trees touched their branches together. It was all a joke, a stupid joke. All right, I said. So where are we really going to swim? Mark smiled and stepped to the edge. He looked back at me, turned, put his leg out, and fell. I thought he was dead. I really thought he was dead. Did I say I thought he was dead? I looked over the edge. He wasn't dead. He was just climbing out of the pool and quickly wiping himself down. I wasn't sure why. And now he was looking up and grinning. You coming? He hollered. I could just hear him above the sound of the falls. I'm not sure that I was glad he wasn't dead. The other guys stepped to the ledge. They looked back at me, smiled, turned, put a leg out, and fell, one after the other. I guess you can figure out how that left me up alone on the ledge. I looked down. All three guys were standing on rocks above the pool, still wiping themselves as they looked up at me. You coming? They hollered. Of course I was coming. I mean, what would you do? I stood at the edge, toes clenched around the rock. This wasn't something you could practice. If you jumped out too far or to the sides, you'd miss the pool, hit the sharp rocks, and die. If you didn't jump out far enough, you'd scrape against the sharp rocks all the way down and leave whole organs hanging behind you. After that, the current coming across the pool would wash your organless body over the 70-foot cliff and down to the undercurrent below, and they wouldn't find you until next spring. You come in or not? Did I say that I hated them? I flexed my knees. I was going to do this. I bounced up and down a little. I was really going to do this. I flexed my knees again. I'd have to be sure not to scream on the way down. I flexed my knees again. I really, really was going to do this. I looked down at the tiny black pool. Flexed my knees again. Looked down at the tiny black pool. And I wasn't going to do this. Would you? I hardly even knew two of these guys, and I had only known Mark for 2 or 3 weeks. At the end of the summer, I'd be going home, where no one jumped off ledges into black pools. I'd probably never see these guys again. So if I didn't jump, so what? My dog would still love me. None of my friends would ever hear about it. The sun would come up tomorrow morning. So what? I took a step back. And that is when Mindy White showed up. Mindy White. Did I tell you she has green eyes? Long black hair? She clambered up the rocks and called to the guys, and her long black hair blew behind her. And Mark pointed up, and Mindy White turned her green eyes to me, and she said, "Is Ethan going to jump?" That's what she said. "Is Ethan going to jump?" And suddenly, the world was clear, because I knew two things. First, Mindy White knew my name. Did you catch that? Second, I was going to jump. I stepped onto the edge. I clenched my toes, flexed my knees, a little more bouncing. Remember not to scream on the way down. Another bounce, and I stepped out. I took about half an hour to fall those 40 feet. I watched the black water coming closer and closer. I didn't scream. I kept my arms at my sides so I wouldn't snap off my fingers by hitting them against the rocks. I blew out my nose so water wouldn't get forced up into my brain. And then I was under. Under! Alive! Okay! Under, alive, and okay! And Mindy White had seen me jump! Back to the surface. It was beautiful. Everything was beautiful. I climbed onto the rocks. I looked down at the pool, and then at myself, and I knew right away why the water was black. It was filled with leeches. As fast as I could, I wiped them off and plucked the ones who had gotten hold, but I didn't even care. It was all beautiful. The sharp and slimy rocks, the black pool, the leeches, the white and brutal light. It was all beautiful. Because Mindy White, who knew my name, had watched me jump with her lovely green eyes. And I let my eyes move up to her, because she was standing on the rocks above the pool, and her black hair was blowing, and there she was. Kissing Mark Mann. Kissing Mark Mann. Kissing Mark Mann. There she was. Later, we climbed down the rocks beside the 70-foot falls. The two guys first, then Mark and Mindy, then me. I never looked down. The next story we're going to read today is by Alan Lawrence Sitomer, and it's called Wanda Panshuckle, the Worst Babysitter Ever. But first we're going to read what really happened that Alan Lawrence Sitomer based this story off of, which is called The Day I Ditched School. "Yo, wanna ditch today?" Geoffrey Peterson asked me. "We'll blow this place and head to my house. It'll be cool." Geoff asked me this question at 7:28 a.m. Come 7:30, the bell would ring, and then adults from all over would start rushing us to class. It was a now or never decision. "Sure," I said. I'd never ditched before. Sounded like fun. As we snuck away from campus, I heard the school bell ring in the background behind me. Whether I was there or not, it seemed the day would go on. We walked 20 minutes to Geoff's. "My mom's at work," he said as he turned the key. "She won't be home till about 4:30. "Cool," I answered. First thing we did was eat, but Geoff didn't really have any good food. There were no frozen pizzas and microwave burritos, just cereal. But his mom was out of milk. I thought about pouring water on some Fruit Loops, but that seemed gross. So I simply decided to snack on some fat-free tortilla chips. That's the only thing Geoff had thought I would like, a 2-pound bag of fat-free tortilla chips. We turned on the TV. I never realized how many dumb shows were on in the morning. Fat women talking about their problems, skinny women talking about their problems, lots of shows about lots of women talking about their problems. Finally, we decided to watch a program where old people played price games to try and win a washer-dryer. Dumb! I looked at the clock. It was only 8:53 a.m., and already I was bored. Since I never got home from school until 3:15 p.m., I still had more than 6 hours to go before I could leave. We decided to play video games. Geoff has weak vids, though, stuff I had played over and over about 100 million times. After 2.5 hours, I was bored again, and hungry, too. But not really that hungry, because it seems I'd eaten about 1 pound of fat-free tortilla chips since I cranked open the bag. A gross, nasty taste sat on my tongue. Wow, I could have used a Pepsi. But Geoff didn't have any Pepsi, just water and ketchup. I thought about leaving, but where was I to go? Back to school? No, I'd get in trouble. To the park? No, we could get caught by someone. To a friend's house? No, all my friends were in school. I was so bored. The only excitement in the next few hours came when the mailman showed up. Geoff and I hid behind the couch, thinking he might try to bust us or something, but he never even looked in the window. He just dropped off some letters and left. When 3 o'clock finally came, I opened the front door and felt the sun on my face for the first time that day. I had a headache and wanted to throw up. It was like I'd been trapped in a shoebox all day, and holy smokes, did I need my toothbrush. I left. "How was school, honey?" my mom asked when I walked in the door. For a moment, I panicked. I thought it was a trick question. "Fine," I said, nervously waiting for her to explode with rage. "That's nice," she answered. Turns out it wasn't a trick question. My mom never knew the difference. The next day, I found out that our science teacher, Mr. Roddy, had brought a live tarantula to class and let it walk across his face. And Miss Ingram, the math teacher, broke her heel and fell down in front of everyone. Plus, I got an F on a pop quiz for history I totally would have aced, and I didn't get to see Amanda Burns, the girl I had a huge crush on all day. Big bummer. Then, the kicker of all kickers. I had written a creative writing assignment for English class. It was fun to write, and funny to read, and had a lot of laughs. Not only did I get an A on the assignment, but it was so good that my English teacher, Mr. Thompson, decided to read it out loud. Not just to my class, but to all of his classes, the entire 8th grade. So where was I during my moment of fame and celebrity and awesomeness? Trapped without food in a land of weak video games, watching the seconds slowly tick by on a torturous clock. Sure, the next day people congratulated me and told me they liked my story, but I totally missed the big day. It would be like winning the Super Bowl on a Sunday afternoon, but not finding out till Monday that you are victorious, long after everyone had partied through the night. By the time I had learned of the news, it was old news. In a word, anticlimactic. Later that week, when I saw Geoff at 7:28 a.m., I hustled into class before he could make eye contact with me. Maybe breaking the rules and being bad wasn't all I was hyped up to be. And I never ate fat-free tortilla chips again. So that's what really happened, and here is the story that Alan Sloren Sitomer wrote based on that day. Wanda Panshuckle, worst babysitter ever. Cruel, vicious, has no right to be around kids whatsoever, much less babysit them. Of course, I'm speaking about Wanda Panshuckle, this loony, nutty, totally coconuts woman who nearly ruined my life. I could tell you about the 3 yellow warts on her nose. I could explain about her green breath. I could go on about how she has claws instead of fingernails, razor blades for teeth, and webbed feet. None of it would be true. Wanda Panshuckle appeared to be as polite, nice, and normal as any regular old lady could be. That's what made her so sinister. What she looked like on the outside and how she actually acted were totally opposite. "Hello, I'm Wanda Panshuckle. Quite pleased to make your acquaintance." Those were the lines this 600-year-old woman used to fool my parents into hiring her. Mom won a trip to Europe in a contest through our local supermarket, and Dad refused, as he clearly said, to take our son Benjamin out of school. Not that I was disappointed, because traveling with people who are actually excited to walk through museums and go gaga over portraits painted by dead people sounded like the boringest vacation ever offered to a kid. I didn't want to travel for a gajillion hours on an airplane. I didn't want to eat food from menus written in languages I couldn't read, and I didn't want to stare at buildings and pretend that roofs and doors and window frames hammered together 500 years ago captivated my interest. And my parents didn't want to travel with a nonstop complainer. So we struck a deal. They would go away and someone would stay with me for a week. Of course, whoever it was would have to be responsible. They would have to make sure I took care of all my responsibilities, and they would have to make absolutely certain I did everything my parents would have expected me to do. Let's just say it didn't quite work out that way. On day one, Wanda Panshuckle let me go to school with chocolate on my face. After letting me eat chocolate chip cookies covered in double fudge chocolate sauce dunked in chocolate milk for breakfast. I didn't need to gobble any fruit, I wasn't required to brush my teeth before I left the house, and I didn't even have to wear clean clothes or comb my hair. She just let me do whatever I wanted, and when I came home, it was more of the same. I didn't have to do my homework. I didn't have to clean up my plate. I didn't have to turn off the TV, stop playing video games, or go to bed on time. She let me do anything. This babysitter is so weird, I told Mikey Lumpkin as we chatted in the school cafeteria on the second day of this. Mikey's lunch consisted of a turkey sandwich, a sliced apple, an organic fig bar, and a few non-fried sesame crisps. My bag, packed by me, of course, contained powdered donuts, salty potato chips, a pickle, and a warm can of soda pop. Like, I don't think she has any rules whatsoever. Dude, you are the luckiest kid alive, Mikey told me. You gotta push this babysitter to the limit. See how far you can go. I plucked the tip of a can of whipped cream into my mouth and filled my face with a glob of white fluff. Yeah, I brought that too. You think? Absolutely, Mikey said. Find this woman's limits. Wanna come over? Can't, Mikey said. My parents know your parents are out of town, and they already told me I shouldn't even bother to ask. Bummer, I said. But at least you know that this lady, Miss Wanda Panshuckle, is about to meet her doom. Awesome, Benny. And remember, you're not just doing this for yourself, Mikey said. You're doing this for all kids everywhere. I spent the rest of the afternoon making plans. Wanda Panshuckle had no idea what kind of ride she was in for. When I walked in the house after school, Wanda Panshuckle passed me the phone. Oh, Benjamin, it's your parents. I covered the speaker with my hand. Should I tell them everything is okay? Tell them whatever you want. Was this a trick? I looked around the house. Dirty dishes in the sink, clothes scattered everywhere. I'd forgotten to feed the dog. Things were not okay. Not at all. But that's not what I told my father. Hi, Dad, how's your trip? Yeah, things are fine. Sure, I'm being a good listener. Of course I'm keeping up with school. Yep. Hi, Mom, how's your trip? Yeah, things are fine. Yes, Mom, I'm being a good listener. Very clean. Not up too late at all. Yep, limiting the TV. Pepper's great. Okay, speak to you tomorrow. Love you, bye. I hung up and realized I'd just told my parents more lies in one phone call than I'd ever told them in the entire history of my life. What was this Wanda Panshuckle woman doing to me? I passed her the phone. I'm sorry, did you want to talk to them again? I asked. No. You know, I said, to fill them in? Nope. Well, I guess you want me to do my homework right now? If you think. Or maybe clean up some of the mess I made last night, or go feed Pepper or something? Wanda Panshuckle sat down on the couch and opened a book. Up to you. I squinted. This was very suspicious. That's when I had my aha moment. Oh, I get it. She's testing me. Well, let's just see how she likes this. I raced to the kitchen and grabbed a piece of silverware from the drawer. Is it okay if I put the steak knife into the electrical socket? I put the tip of the blade right next to the wall outlet. Wanda Panshuckle casually looked up from her novel. If that's what you'd like to do. I edged the steel tip closer. I wasn't even supposed to handle these kind of super sharp knives, much less go anywhere near electrocuting myself. I'm gonna do it, I said. Okay. I really am, I told her. On the count of three, I'm gonna just jam it in there. One. She licked her finger and turned a page. Two, I warned, moving the silver tip right up against the plug. Two and a half, I said real slowly. Wanda Panshuckle didn't budge. Three, I yelled and tensed up all my muscles. Wanda Panshuckle scratched her ear and continued reading her novel, relaxed and at ease. I put the knife down. This woman is an absolute loon, I thought. Time to take this to the next level. Playing with matches. I settled on a lighter when I couldn't find any matches. Is it okay if I set the curtains on fire? I asked with a click of the lighter. I brought the orange flame oh so close to my mother's favorite drapes. Wall to ceiling, the material extended at least 12 feet, and for sure is the kind of fabric that had to be flammable. If that's what you want to do this afternoon, Benjamin, sure. Hello, excuse me, I'm like playing with fire right now? Do you need some help? Help, I said, flabbergasted. You're supposed to stop me from... Ouch! The heat from the flame burned my finger, and I decided to go put the lighter back in the kitchen drawer before I really did do something stupid and hurt myself. This woman was clearly using psychology on me. Maybe reverse psychology. Maybe even reverse psychology, the kind they use in the CIA and at the movie theater to try to get you to buy overpriced popcorn with a large drink and the combo deal that's never worth it. I fed the dog and loaded the dishwasher. I needed a new plan. So, where are we? Mikey asked the next day. Well, I said, popping a chunk of apple in my mouth for lunch. Last night, I'd eaten up in a small puddle of vomit in the back of my throat. After 4 days, taking a break from junk food wasn't an option. It was a necessity. The situation is not looking good. I'm losing the battle. Take it to the next level, buddy. The next level? What's that? An R-rated movie. I gasped. An R-rated movie? No way! Then I thought about it. Mikey, you're a genius. I had never seen an R-rated movie before, and I know that if I chose something super scary with lots of blood and guts and murder and death, then Wanda Panshuckle would have to come to her senses, turn off the movie, and I'd have my first victory in the war to get her to act like a proper caregiver and make me behave. I entered the house and asked, "Can we watch a movie together?" "Sure, Benjamin." "But I want to watch something scary," I said, giggling to myself. "Okay." "Something R-rated, like really R-rated." "That's fine. What's the name of it?" I paused. I didn't know any R-rated movies. I felt stumped. "Want me to pick it?" Wanda Panshuckle offered. "Yeah," I said emphatically, "but make sure it's absolutely terrifying." "You got it," she said. "Should I start it now?" "No, let's watch it after the sun goes down. Scary movies are always better when it's dark." "I agree," she said. I went to my room, ditched my homework for the fourth day in a row, a new record for me, and eagerly counted the minutes until the sun sank over the horizon. At 9 p.m., when it was good and blackout, I went downstairs, but not before turning off every light in the house. "That'll get her," I thought. "Ready?" Wanda Panshuckle asked. "Ready," I said, stuffing a grape in my mouth. The thought of popcorn made me want to barf. 3 minutes into the movie, I saw a dead person's head spin around. 15 minutes later, I realized the dead person whose head had just spun around wasn't really dead, and was outside of a two-story house that looked kind of like mine, and he was about to cut off the pinky toes of a bunch of giggling teenagers after having escaped from an insane asylum. 20 minutes after that, the bad guy with the spinning head who had escaped from the insane asylum had not only chopped off 11 different pinky toes, but he'd eaten 8 of them and was wearing 3 others as a necklace. Next plan for him had something to do with chewing off a kitten's ear. I couldn't let Wanda see, but I needed to get away from this movie, far away. And I would have, too, but all the lights were turned off, and I was too scared to walk through the dark house all the way to my room unescorted. Wanda Panshuckle suddenly jumped. "Did you hear something?" "Huh? What? Where?" "Oh, nothing," she said, relaxing back against the couch. "I thought I heard a squeak coming from upstairs." "A squeak," I thought. The head-spinning pinky-toe eater who escaped from the insane asylum had an artificial leg made of rusty metal that squeaked. "I'm getting a little tired," I said, faking a yawn. "Maybe we ought to call it a night." "Don't you want to watch the end of the film?" "You know, it's really not all that exciting," I lied. Wanda Panshuckle reached for the remote. "It's one of my favorites. Because usually the bad guy dies at the end of the movie, but in this movie the bad guy lives." "Lives?" I said. "Well, sure," Wanda Panshuckle replied. "It's based on a true story. You can't just change things like that." "A true story?" Gulp. I reached down and touched my pinky toe, just to make sure it was still there. "Well, good night, Benjamin," Wanda Panshuckle headed off to the guest bedroom, which, of course, was downstairs. "So if you're too scared to watch your room, where did you sleep?" Mikey asked me the next day when I told him all about the movie. "On the couch with paper towels for a blanket." "What did you use for a pillow?" "My shoe." "Ooh, rough. You were that scared, huh?" "I told you, this Wanda Panshuckle woman is crazy." "You still have time to beat her," Mikey assured me. "I don't know," I said. "I do," Mikey exclaimed, "and you must. I have the answer." "Yeah, what's that?" He looked around to make sure no one else was listening. "Cigarettes." Mikey rubbed his hands together and cackled. "You'll smoke an entire pack." I wrinkled my nose. "You'll get her to take you to the store, buy you a pack of smokes, bring you home, and then light you up. After you puff the first, you go for a second. After you finish the second, you go for a third. And then," Mikey said, completely in love with this idea, "you go to your parents' bedroom and you smoke 3 more butts. The smell will never come out by the time they get home tomorrow, and they'll freak out 10,000%. This, my friend, is a guaranteed win." He smiled, big and proud. "So, let me get this straight. You want me to get cancer?" Mikey didn't answer. "And you want me to choke? Also, you want me to smell like an ashtray, pollute my lungs, foul up my parents' whole house, and inhale an entire pack of the worst substance a kid could ever put into his body? You know what the real problem is, Mikey? The real problem is I've been listening to you." I stormed out of the cafeteria. When I got home, I did a week's worth of homework in one night, all in for at least some sort of school credit. And then I did 2 loads of laundry, washed all the dishes, mopped the kitchen floor, bathed the dog, and even scrubbed the toilets. Gross, right? Well, not to me. For dinner, I had a fresh green salad. For breakfast, I ate a scrambled egg. And for lunch, I packed my own turkey sandwich with the side of sliced apple and an organic fig bar. which I ate far, far, far away from Mikey Lumpkin. When I got home, my parents were just arriving back from Europe. "Benny!" they exclaimed, and we shared lots of hugs. After kisses, gifts, and me offering to help them bring in their luggage, both my mom and dad looked around the house in amazement. "Good gracious, this place is clean. Thank you, Wanda." "Wasn't me," Wanda Panchuckle said. "It was all Benjamin." "Benny!" they squealed at me at the same time. Mom and Dad looked at one another in shock. "I don't believe it. What's your secret?" they asked her. "Secret? There's no secret," Wanda Panchuckle picked up her suitcase and got ready to leave. "Really, I didn't do anything at all." Then she walked out the door and left. Thank goodness, I thought. Spending a week with Wanda Panchuckle was absolutely terrifying. So it's pretty amazing how this author managed to get such a crazy story just from one bad choice of skipping school for a day and being bored out of his mind. Just again, that was Alan Lawrence Sitomer, Wanda Panchuckle, the worst babysitter ever. And before that, we read Falls by Gary D. Schmidt. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed our stories today. This is Mrs. Sam from the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon. You're listening to Short Stories with Mrs. Sam, brought to you by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. Tune in every week on Sunday at 8:30 a.m. to WHDD 91.9 FM to catch our show and hear more short stories. Thanks to Penguin Random House for letting us share stories from their published collection, Been There, Done That. All sounds used in this recording are from freesound.org.